Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your host, Diana, here with you every Saturday to bring you the news and top stories from the Military Times, your independent news source about your military. And first up to bat, we have some top stories, including this one, U.S. withdrawing 5,000 troops from Germany, U.S. officials say. The United States is withdrawing 5,000 troops from NATO ally Germany, the Pentagon announced on Friday, as a rift over the Iran war widens between President Donald Trump and Europe. Trump had threatened a drawdown in forces earlier this week after sparring with German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, who said on Monday the Iranians were humiliating the U.S. in talks to end the 2-month-old war and that he did not see what exit strategy Washington was pursuing. A senior Pentagon official speaking on condition of anonymity said recent German rhetoric had been inappropriate and unhelpful. The official said the president is rightly reacting to these counterproductive remarks. The Pentagon said the withdrawal was expected to be completed over the next 6 to 12 months. Germany is home to some 35,000 active-duty U.S. military personnel, more than anywhere else in Europe. The official said the drawdown would bring U.S. troop levels in Europe back to roughly pre-2022 levels before Russia's invasion of Ukraine triggered a buildup by then-President Joe Biden. The official also cast the decision in terms of the Trump administration's push for Europe to become the main security provider on the continent, but it is nonetheless another potent reminder of Trump's willingness to respond to perceived disloyalty by allies. Reuters exclusively reported last week an internal Pentagon email that outlined options to punish NATO allies that Washington believes failed to support U.S. operations in the war with Iran, including suspending Spain from NATO and reviewing the U.S. position on Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. German ties fray. Trump has singled out Germany, even as he has chastised other NATO allies for not sending their navies to help open the Strait of Hormuz during the conflict. The waterway, a choke point for global oil shipments, has remained virtually shut, causing market turmoil and unprecedented disruption in energy supplies. Merz has said Germans and Europeans were not consulted before the U.S. and Israel started attacking Iran on February 28th. And that he had conveyed his skepticism about the conflict directly to Trump afterwards. A senior Pentagon official said, "The president has been very clear about his frustrations, about our allies' rhetoric, and failure to provide support for U.S. operations that benefit them." Trump has long wanted to reduce the U.S. troop presence in Germany. He pushed for a reduction at the end of his first term, but that cut was never enacted. Trump lost the election, and Biden reversed the plan. Trump's Wednesday announcement that he was reviewing U.S. troop levels in Germany surprised German military officials who spoke to Reuters, citing what they called constructive meetings at the Pentagon earlier in the day. They argue that Germany has done more than other allies to support the U.S. war in Iran, including allowing the use of bases and giving permissions for overflights. Germany is also home to a huge military hospital in Landstuhl. As part of Trump's withdrawal decision, a brigade combat team now in Germany will be pulled out of the country, and a long-range fires battalion that the Biden administration had planned to begin deploying to Germany later this year will no longer deploy, the official said. That's all for that article. In other news, the U.S. to close its flagship Gaza mission as Trump plan stalls. A U.S. military-run body near Gaza that critics say failed in its mission to monitor the Israel-Hamas ceasefire and boost aid flows to besieged Palestinians is set to be shut by the Trump administration, sources familiar with the matter told Reuters. The closing of the Civil Military Coordination Center in Israel would mark the latest blow to President Donald Trump's Gaza plan, already undermined by repeated Israeli attacks since the October truce, and a refusal by Hamas to lay down its arms. Diplomats said the move, which has not been previously reported, underscores the difficulties facing U.S. efforts to oversee the truce and coordinate on aid, as Israel seizes more Gaza territory and Hamas firms its grip in areas under its control. The move could add to unease among Washington's allies, whom Trump encouraged to deploy personnel to the CMCC and commit funds for his Gaza rebuilding plan, effectively on hold since the U.S. launched its joint war with Israel against Iran. Trump-led board denies CMCC is closing. According to the sources, seven diplomats familiar with CMCC operations, the U.S.-led body's aid and monitoring responsibilities would soon be handed to a U.S.-commanded international security mission that is meant to deploy to Gaza. U.S. officials have privately described the move as an overhaul, but diplomats said the International Stabilization Force would in effect take over, ending the CMCC's role. A diplomat briefed on the U.S. plan said that the number of U.S. troops working at the revamped ISF would drop to 40 from around 190. The U.S. would seek to replace those troops with civilian staff from other countries, the diplomat said. All of them spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly. Diplomats say the CMCC lacked authority to enforce the ceasefire or ensure aid, making it unclear whether folding it into the ISF would have much practical effect on the ground. The Board of Peace denied in a statement posted on social media after the Reuters story was published that the CMCC was closing without addressing whether the ISF would take over its responsibilities. Earlier, an official with the Trump's Board of Peace set up to oversee Gaza policy declined to comment on the CMCC's future, but said the center plays a critical role in ensuring aid deliveries and coordinating efforts in advancing Trump's plan. The White House and the U.S. military's Middle East Command both referred requests for comment to the Board of Peace. Once the CMCC is folded into the ISF, the body is expected to be rebranded as the International Gaza Support Center, two of the sources said. It would likely be led by U.S. Major General Jasper Jeffers, the White House-appointed ISF commander. The ISF was supposed to deploy immediately to Gaza to establish control and maintain security, but that has yet to happen, with only a handful of countries having so far pledged troops, and none of them have committed to security roles. Washington has said U.S. troops would not deploy to Gaza. The ISF has, however, established a walled-off annex inside the CMCC, which has been operating from a warehouse in southern Israel, but access to the annex is tightly controlled by U.S. troops, who, three sources said, regularly deny entry to representatives from allied countries. Israeli attacks continue despite ceasefire. The CMCC's establishment was a key element of Trump's 20-point plan for Gaza, following a ceasefire meant to halt Israel-Hamas fighting and allow for rebuilding the territory after its pulverization by Israel in the 2 years of fighting. Dozens of countries, including Germany, France, Britain, Egypt, and the United Arab Emirates, sent personnel, including military planners and intelligence officials, to the center as they sought to influence discussions on Gaza's future. But, with Israel continuing to carry out attacks and pushing its armistice line with Hamas deeper into Gaza, diplomats say the CMCC's momentum faded. Hamas has also reassumed governance in a coastal slice of Gaza under its control. Some countries now send representatives as little as once a month, one diplomat said. Another said only a handful of countries regularly showed up. Israel says its attacks in Gaza aim to stop threats from Hamas or people approaching the armistice line. Palestinians say this is a pretext to subsume more of Gaza in a bid to force them from land they seek for a future state. More than 800 Palestinians and four Israeli soldiers have been killed since the ceasefire, meant to halt a war that started with the October 7, 2023 Hamas-led attack on Israel. During the fighting, Israel reduced much of Gaza to rubble, displacing nearly the entire 2 million population, and ruined infrastructure needed for water distribution, sanitation, and electricity. The CMCC was intended to help ensure aid was delivered to Palestinians in need. Diplomats say aid levels have remained largely stagnant, despite an influx of commercial goods entering Gaza, with Israel banning many items that it says can carry dual military and civilian uses. Those items include poles needed for tents in displaced persons' camps and heavy machinery needed to clear rubble. COGAT, or COGAT, the Israeli military agency that controls access to Gaza, said that 80% of trucks entering Gaza daily carried commercial goods purchased in Israel, but that they were intended to supplement humanitarian supplies. The Board of Peace official said Gaza ultimately needs what they described as a, quote, sustainable civilian administration to truly transform from the years of aid dependency and cycles of violence that have clouded its past. Okay, that's all for that article, but speaking of the past, here's a little bit of military history. A history of the War Powers Resolution and what it means for the Iran War. James Madison wrote regarding Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 of the U.S. Constitution, quote, "In no part of the Constitution is more wisdom to be found than in the clause which confides the question of war or peace to the legislature and not to the executive. The Constitution supposes what the history of all governments demonstrates, that the executive is the branch of power most interested in war and most prone to it." Madison continued, "It has accordingly, with studied care, vested the question of war in the legislature. The Constitution delineates that the legislative branch, and only the legislative branch, has the power to declare war. However, the term declare has been open to interpretation since the Constitution's signing, with American presidents going to war without congressional approval for centuries, according to History.com. For example, in 1846, James Polk's occupation of Texas in the subsequent Mexican-American War was without congressional consent, while at the outbreak of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln likewise authorized early military action without Congress. The U.S. has technically not been in a state of war since 1945, and yet, more than 100,000 service members have died in conflicts spanning the globe since May 8th and September 2nd, 1945, respectively. Since the 1950s and the term, quote, police action, entered the government's lexicon, the right of Congress to declare war has been dealt a series of escalating blows. By 1963, President John F. Kennedy was sending military equipment and advisors in South Vietnam. 1 year later, America was secretly bombing Laos, eventually leaving it the most heavily bombed country per capita in the world. According to History.com, Marines were on the ground in 1965. As part of Operation Menu in 1969, President Richard Nixon was bombing Cambodia, a fact that was withheld from the American public until the New York Times revealed the operation to the public. By the following year, with American ground troops deploying to northern Cambodia, waves of criticism met the president and triggered a check on presidential power. This case of executive overreach by Nixon in Cambodia led to the passage of the War Powers Resolution on November 7, 1973, with Congress overriding Nixon's veto by a two-thirds majority. The Vietnam-era law was designed to ensure that the collective judgment of Congress and the president were in lockstep if and when U.S. armed forces entered into hostilities. Now, according to the Friends Committee on National Legislation, the War Powers Resolution has three main components. 1. The president must get a declaration of war or specific authorization from Congress before sending troops overseas, unless the United States or its armed forces are attacked. 2. If the president initiates hostilities, these can last only 60 days and must then be terminated unless Congress authorizes their continuation. 3. If there is no declaration of war or specific statutory authorization passed within 60 days, Congress can require the president to end the U.S. participation in hostilities at any time. The act has created significant tension between Congress and the executive branch, with presidents like Ronald Reagan sidestepping Congress in Grenada, George H.W. Bush in Panama, and during the first Gulf War, and Bill Clinton in Kosovo. Just 1 week after the 9/11 attacks, Congress passed the Authorization for the Use of Military Force, authorizing the president to use, quote, all necessary and appropriate force against those nations, organizations, or persons he determines planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks that occurred on September 11, 2001, or harbored such organizations or persons in order to prevent any future acts of international terrorism against the United States by such nations, organizations, or persons. Hence, the AUMF has subsequently paved the way for Presidents George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, and Joe Biden to wage war not only in Iraq and Afghanistan, but also in Pakistan, Somalia, Syria, Yemen, and other nations for more than two decades as part of the war on terror. Now, as the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran reaches its critical 60th day of operations, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth controversially claimed on Thursday that the fragile ceasefire with Iran means that Trump does not yet have to seek congressional consent to extend the war. Hegseth argued that the pause in hostilities freezes the ticking clock that would otherwise require the president either to get agreement from lawmakers or to end military operations after 60 days. Hegseth told Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat of Virginia, during a Senate Armed Services Committee hearing, quote, we are in a ceasefire right now, which in our understanding means the 60-day clock pauses or stops. Friday marked 60 days since the Trump administration notified Congress that it had launched strikes on Iran. The law gives the president the option to ask for a 30-day extension, though it is unclear whether Trump intends to do so. Kaine said, in response, I do not believe the statute would support that, adding serious constitutional concerns, and we don't want to layer those with additional statutory concerns. Any member of the House or Senate, regardless of committee assignment, can invoke Section 5C of the War Powers Resolution and get a full floor vote on whether to require the president to remove U.S. armed forces from hostilities. Under the procedural rules of the War Powers Act, these bills are granted expedited status, requiring a full floor vote in the House within 15 calendar days, and in the Senate within 10 calendar days of introduction. All right, I hope you found that article insightful. Up next, concerning military pay and benefits. A beans and rice diet. Government watchdog finds issues with military cost of living pay. For soldiers stationed in some of the world's most expensive areas, an important financial buffer meant to offset high prices may not always reflect the cost of living, a government watchdog found. The Department of Defense uses location-specific surveys and price and military spending data to set cost of living allowances, known as COLAs. In a report released on Thursday, the Government Accountability Office found that the department used a mix of unsound sampling practices and inconsistent processes to set COLAs, raising questions about whether payments reflect local expenses. Service members stationed in places like Hawaii, Japan, Alaska, Germany, and Virginia, where the cost of living is often higher, receive COLA, or additional payments to help offset costs. The total amount a service member receives is also based on the number of dependents in the household. The vast majority of those payments, the GAO said, are sent to soldiers stationed outside of the continental U.S., or OCONUS, versus those stationed inside the continental U.S., known as CONUS. The watchdog highlighted inconsistencies between how the department calculated COLA payments for OCONUS versus CONUS duty locations. The auditors also found discrepancies in the amount of and type of information local commands provided soldiers in areas that receive COLA, and in some cases, service members reported confusion about what they were entitled to or why it might change. In the report, investigators noted that some Defense Department personnel said changes to COLA payments made it hard for them to budget for their households. In 9 of the 17 discussion group summaries we held in locations that receive a COLA, participants mentioned that COLA fluctuates so much that they cannot rely on it as part of their budgets, the report said, later giving an example where a high-ranking officer in Japan linked issues with COLA to problems with readiness. Eating a beans and rice diet has a direct impact on our ability to fight, he told auditors. The office included several recommendations for the Defense Department to fix its findings, including aligning the CONUS and OCONUS payments for dependents and applying its processes for location-specific costs more consistently. The Defense Department concurred with both recommendations but did not agree with the separate suggestion to use random sampling for service members' shopping patterns. The auditors also recommended requiring local commands to give information about COLA to service members, a suggestion the department only partially concurred with, arguing that the Defense Travel Management Office maintains publicly available information and that the department does not have a central point of contact for COLA inquiries. And now for an article published about 5 days ago for Veterans. Vietnam veteran daughter sue VA over Agent Orange birth defect benefits. A soldier exposed to Agent Orange while serving in Vietnam and his daughter have taken the Department of Veterans Affairs to court over disability benefits for children born with birth defects linked to the toxic herbicide. Former Army telecommunications technician Ronald Cristoforo, along with Michelle Cristoforo, filed suit Monday in the U.S. District Court of Connecticut, alleging that the VA discriminates against thousands of disabled children of Vietnam veterans by providing compensation to those whose mothers served but not their fathers, with one exception, children born with spina bifida. In the suit, the Cristoforos note that Michelle's birth defect, which causes dwarfism, is specifically covered by the VA for the children of female veterans who served in Vietnam. Ronald Cristoforo applied for VA Agent Orange-related disability benefits for Michelle in 2022, but was denied. According to the suit, the VA told Cristoforo that Michelle's mother would have had to serve in Vietnam or Korea to qualify. The Cristoforos argue that the decision was unconstitutional because it is based on sex discrimination. When the VA rejected my claim, they didn't say my condition wasn't real or that it wasn't caused by Agent Orange. They said my father's service didn't count the same as a mother's would. How can that be legal? Michelle Cristoforo said in a statement Monday. According to the suit, roughly 200 children were born with birth defects to female Vietnam veterans, while an estimated 350,000 children of fathers who served have birth defects. The VA began awarding disability benefits to the children of Vietnam veterans born with spina bifida in 1996, and 4 years later expanded the list of eligible conditions for the children of women in Vietnam veterans to 18. The expanded list includes achondroplasia, the defect that caused Michelle Cristoforo's dwarfism. The Cristoforos, represented by Yale Law School's Veterans Legal Services Clinic, want the courts to declare the VA's sex-based disability awards as unconstitutional and provide disability benefits to all children who qualify, regardless of whether their mother or father served in Vietnam. All other circumstances equal, if Mr. Cristoforo were female, he could rely on the benefits provided under the law to ensure his child would receive the medical care, educational benefits, and income support she needs. The only difference in his ability to have this assurance is his sex, the lawsuit noted. Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, has sponsored legislation that would increase research on birth defects in veterans exposed to environmental pollutants, such as Agent Orange, and the burn pits used in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere to dispose of waste. On Monday, Blumenthal said children with a disability related to their parents' service-connected exposure deserve equal benefits without exception. Michelle's condition is real. Her father's service is unquestionable, and the damage caused by Agent Orange is well documented. Denying her VA benefits solely because her father served rather than her mother is both unjust and cruel, Blumenthal said. Linda Schwartz, a Vietnam veteran and advisor to Vietnam Veterans of America, added that research does not justify this distinction between maternal or paternal exposure and birth defects, and she supports the suit. Our members came home from Vietnam carrying wounds that didn't always show up right away, and some of those wounds were passed on to their children. It is long past time it does the same for the children of the men who served alongside them, Schwartz said in a statement. Agent Orange is the name given to defoliants used in Vietnam and elsewhere to strip combat zones of vegetation that could be used by enemy forces for camouflage. The herbicides contain a type of dioxin that is a known carcinogen linked to cancers, chronic conditions, and birth defects. The Justice Department, which represents the VA, did not respond to a request for comment by publication. And lastly, a fun story to round it all up from the Observation Post. That time the Air Force proposed making a gay bomb. In 1994, U.S. Air Force's Wright Laboratory in Ohio were pressing the bounds to the question, "Fellas, is it gay to fight for your country?" In the early aughts of the 1990s, the Pentagon was working on developing a whole host of non-lethal chemical weapons that would render an enemy force incapable of being anything other than amorous or annoyed. Within a 3-page declassified document came a blink and you miss it line, positing using, quote, chemicals that affect human behavior so that morale and discipline in enemy units is adversely affected. One distasteful but completely non-lethal example, it continued, would be strong aphrodisiacs, especially if the chemical also caused homosexual behavior. In a word, a chemical weapon that would make enemy soldiers sexually irresistible to one another, striking a blow to morale. The Randi chemical, later dubbed gay bomb, was just one of the many that the Wright Laboratory explored in its proposal dubbed Project Sunshine. Among others, Project Sunshine contained a litany of ideas ranging from the absurd to impractical, including making a chemical that made personnel very sensitive to sunlight, making a weapon that would attract swarms of enraged wasps or rats to an enemy position, and the development of a chemical that caused severe and lasting halitosis. The lab requested $7.5 million over a 5-year period to make their harebrained ideas reality. The funding was not forthcoming. It did, however, eventually make its way to the mind of Tina Fey and 30 Rock. As the saying goes, there are no bad ideas, only great ideas that go horribly wrong. But perhaps the Wright Laboratory is an exception to that rule. All right, well, I hope you enjoyed that last article and that your weekend is off to a great start. Once again, thank you for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. And this is your host, signing out.